Chapter 1. She was standing at the ancient desk in his law office when she unbuttoned her blouse. She was wearing a white button-down Ralph Lauren paisley tie, khaki slacks, penny loafers, and a red beret to keep the page boy cut off her face. Ermeline Ransom was 32, the mother of Jamie, authentic blonde, pale blue eyes. Like most cocktail waitresses, she was a little taller than average, had clear skin and full lips, and was proud of her work and proud of her ability to support her little boy by honest work. Until last night, she had no tattoos, but now she had a mess. Ermeline began loosening the tie and raising it over her head like a noose. Next, the blouse was unbuttoned, top to bottom. She was wearing what could only be a Victoria's Secret bra with its trademark structural engineering, icy red, that featured a green butterfly with a bra clasped in front. The butterfly held everything together, and it separated, wings to the left, thorax to the right. The girl clicked the butterfly, and her breasts spilled forward, freed at last, and pointed at Attorney Thaddeus Murphy like two pears, separate but equal. She shivered and looked away. Thaddeus Murphy's eyes bulged.
Good grief! Who did this to you? Let me grab our camera.
Thaddeus Murphy was 25. Unmarried, a member of Orbit's Rotary and Moose, and a lawyer of 18 months. He was tall enough to play point guard, which he had, on the Arizona Wildcats team that went to the Sweet 16. A bowl cut kept his dark brown hair naturally in place, and the wire spectacles with their round frames gave him the look of a friendly owl, or so his last girlfriend had said. They had broken up after he chose the Midwest over Los Angeles. She had opted for L.A., where her visual arts career could take root. Thaddeus couldn't believe his own eyes. Someone had taken a ballpoint and tattooed Victor, V-I-C-T-O-R, into her breasts. Three letters per breast, each letter maybe 2 inches tall. The ballpoint had broken the skin, and the cuts were deep and angry. There was matted blood around the wounds. Thaddeus was stunned.
Who did this?
Victor Harrow did this, while I was passed out.
You're certain it was Victor?
That's who I was drinking with. We were at his portable office.
The purple bus?
That's the one.
He knew it well. The bus said Harrow and Sons along the side. If Victor Harrow was in fact the one who had mutilated Ermeline Ransom, then Victor was going to end up owing the woman a busload of money. The county would erupt over news like this. He would finally become known. A twinge of excitement thumped through his chest.
Why would Victor do this?
Thaddeus said, coming back to reality.
I think he did it because he knew he could get away with it. Some men are like that.
Thaddeus frowned. It was more than a little difficult imagining Victor carving his name into anyone's breasts. After all, Victor was a deacon at First Christian, the president of Orbit Rotary, and a Silver Star from Vietnam. He was a lot of things, but an assailant of women? Thaddeus's frown deepened. It was all very hard to imagine.
I don't know any men like that.
Then you don't know men. Trust me, Victor Harrow is like that, especially when he's three sheets.
Wait right here. Thaddeus went around to the office door and swung it wide open.
Come in here, please, he called to Christine, and bring the firm camera with you.
Christine complied, and in minutes had made her way to Thaddeus's side. She was unclicking the camera case when she looked up.
Damn, she cried. What happened to you, girl?
Victor Harrow happened to me. Isn't it lovely?
She wiggled her breasts side to side. Against his will, Thaddeus found himself growing aroused.
Now, Christina, I'm going to go to the other room and get some coffee while you take a dozen pictures of Ermeline's breasts, shoot from across the desk, then side view, then close-ups. When I come back, let's everyone be buttoned up and ready to talk, okay?
Got it,
said Christine. Thaddeus was passing through Christine's office waiting room when the phone beeped. He quickly retraced his steps and picked up.
Thaddeus Murphy here. How can I help?
Thad, did she come over?
Said Quentin Irwin Jr., the Hickman County District Attorney and Thaddeus Murphy's best friend.
I sent her to you because I sure as hell didn't know what to do with her. Great tits, though, huh?
Quentin loved raunchy cases like Ermeline's.
She came over. Thanks, I guess. Christine's getting pictures right now.
Are you watching the show?
No, I'm in Christine's office talking to you.
Oh, man, you should be in on taking the pictures.
No chain of evidence. I want to be able to put Christine on the stand and ask her about the photos and establish chain of evidence.
So you're thinking court?
I guess. Any ideas?
File suit against Victor Harrow, I guess. He's got the bucks.
Are you going to prosecute him?
For what? He'll say she consented to it. How else does he get his whole damn name there? I mean, if she was resisting, he wouldn't have gotten anywhere.
She says she was passed out.
That's what she told me, too. I've been to a lot of parties with Ermeline. The girl can hold her booze. I can't see her passed out. My guess, it was Vic who was passed out, and Ermeline did it to herself to get into his bank account.
Damn, you're sick.
Why?
I'll be over at the Dome for coffee around 10:15. We can talk then. I don't want them to hear me out here. Bye. Thaddeus hung up and peeked into his office. From the backside, Ermeline Ransom looked like a bat about to take flight. Her hands and arms were outstretched and her shirt was held wide open while the camera clicked and whirred. He poured a cup of coffee. He slowly counted to 200 and noisily went back inside. By now, Christine and Ermeline were seated in the two client chairs side by side.
Okay, Chris, you got them?
Christine nodded.
I hope they're okay. Front side, top down.
Ermeline pulled a tissue from the box on Thaddeus's desk. She dabbed at her eyes.
I showed Dr. Ahmad this morning. He tried alcohol, but he said it's too deep. Alcohol didn't touch it.
Did he have any other suggestions?
Not really. He had a mom calling for labor and had to leave anyway. But his nurse gave me a tetanus shot. He left a prescription for pain pills. I haven't filled it yet.
Thaddeus gulped his coffee.
Did Christine offer you coffee or a drink when you came in? I told her I was too upset to have anything. Look at my hands shake.
I can see that. You should be upset. But we'll find someone who can do something about this. A dermatology doctor. Maybe it's just a matter of some kind of skin peel or dermabrasion.
Dr. Ahmad said, it's too deep for that. I already asked.
Ermeline's eyes welled up with tears again. She instinctively placed her hand across her breasts, which were protected once again by bra and shirt. The young lawyer knew Ermeline Ransom was a good soul, a hard worker, and a dedicated single mom. But just now, her look was of grave confusion. Something had gone terribly wrong in her life, and she didn't know where to start to unravel it. She dabbed at the tears.
Look, Ermeline, why don't you take us through what happened? What was it, Saturday night or last night? Last night? Amateur night? I worked from 2 until 10 at the Silver Dome, lounge side.
Thaddeus nodded and scribbled a mental note.
You got off at 10 on Sunday night? Right. Bronco Grosky comes on duty then, because Bruce wants someone there who's tough enough to handle the rowdies. I'm only 5'7 and 120 pounds, so I don't scare anyone.
Got it. Thaddeus pulled out a yellow pad and scribbled his first notes. Ermeline, here's the thought. I'm pretty new at lawyering, which you know. You might want to have someone with more experience than me handle this, like Jeremy down the street or his partner Elvin, although Elvin really only wants to do estates. Jeremy used to be district attorney and might really have a feel for this kind of case, where I'm still learning how to patty cake.
I thought of that already. Trouble with everyone in town is they're all in bed with Victor Harrow, or they want to be. I bet having him for a client is every lawyer's dream. He's always getting someone hurt on a highway job or not paying his subs, like he did to my dad, or making new investments and needing more legal papers drawn up. I'm even surprised you're talking to me. You must want him for a client, too.
I might at that, but he would never come to me. I'm too green. Victor Harrow was the richest and thus the most respected man in town. He did this to this poor girl? Thaddeus felt the indignation rising.
Now let's back up. What time did you get to work yesterday? 1:45 in the afternoon. Bruce was changing out the till and making a deposit before the bank deposit box closed.
What were you wearing?
What I always wear. Black mini and white peasant blouse. My hair was blown dry, held by a barrette, and I was wearing pretty heavy lip gloss. Smiles mean tips.
How'd you wind up at Vic Harrow's office? She turned to the window.
Vic had been buying rounds for everyone. He always does. Some of the guys from his cruise were there, and they were kidding around, and Vic was getting them drunk, a benefit of working for him.
Sure.
So, around 9 o'clock, he's in the hallway by the restrooms. I came out of the ladies, and he's hitting the cigarette machine. He's cursing. I told him I'd get Bruce to unlock it. He said okay. Then he said, Ermeline, I need your help tonight. I asked how. He said he had just heard his bid was accepted on a new state job, and he was going to be a millionaire again.
So he was trying to impress you. Was he trying to get in your pants?
That's just Vic. He's always saying what's on his mind, and he doesn't mind who he's saying it to. Maybe not.
But you left with him after you got off?
Over the next little while, he kept buying rounds and asking me, would I tag along to his office? He wanted to share a glass of champagne. He got pretty insistent. He said Betty Ann Harrow was out of town, so he had no one to share the good news with. Honestly, he sounded very lonely.
So you volunteered?
Color me stupid. I guess you could say I volunteered. Vic leaves huge tips for all the girls. What's not to love about Vic and his money? We want him to keep coming back.
So you volunteered, but you were also feathering your nest a little?
A little, yes. I called my babysitter, and she called her folks. Would it be okay for her to stay an extra half hour? She's 15, and it's past curfew, but her parents have no objection. So I tell Victor I'll follow him out to the bus, but only for half an hour. One drink, and then I was off.
Was that okay with him?
His eyes lit up. He smiled that huge smile of his. I felt like I'd made his night.
You followed him in your car. She turned away from the window and looked Thaddeus in the eye.
I followed in my car. I had no intention of staying a minute past 10:30, and I wanted my own ride out of there. Swear to God.
I'm sure that's true. So what happened once you got to the bus?
We went inside. He turned on some lights. He had me wait on the sofa while he poured us a tumbler of champagne. He brought it to me. We toasted. That's when someone knocked on the door. It sounded like the rear door of the bus. Vic went over to the window and looked out. Be right back, he said. He disappeared down the hall. I heard talking, but muffled. Then there was brief shouting, angry sounding. Then a man I've never seen before. He came in with Vic close behind. Meet Johnny Bladani, Vic says, and I stand up and stick out my hand. He takes my hand, then, of all things, he kisses my hand. I was mortified. That's not how we do things in orbit.
What did you find out about Johnny Bladani?
He was down from Chicago on business with Victor. He was only staying 10 or 15 minutes. Victor told him to help himself to some champagne. Mr. Bladani asked if I needed a refill. I said no, but he insisted. It almost yanked it out of my hand. Still smiling all the time. He was very smooth, very oily, very Chicago.
Got it. So he got you a drink.
He did. Then we had a three-way toast to Victor's new business.
Thaddeus looked up from his scribbling. His notes covered 2 pages of the yellow pad. What happened next? Give all the details you can remember.
Next, I woke up. It was black outside and my breasts were like on fire.
And you did what?
I switched on the light over the couch. My blouse was pulled down and my bra was around my neck, all tangled up. I saw my chest and screamed.
Did Vic come when you screamed?
No. In fact, I never did see Vic again. He might have left me there alone, for all I know.
How do you know it was Vic who did this to you and not Johnny Oily Guy?
Why would anyone carve someone else's name in a girl's breasts? It just doesn't make any sense, does it?
Not that I have that kind of experience, but no, I guess it doesn't. So we're pretty sure it was Vic.
When I left, there were no other cars. Just Vic's truck and my car. Johnny Bladani wasn't around. Besides, I was too terrified to pay much attention. All I wanted to do was get the hell out of there and get home and check on Jamie.
You needed to see Jamie.
That was my only thought. I wasn't thinking about what had happened to me or why. I could only think about my little boy who I'd abandoned. My watch said a little after 4 a.m. As soon as I got on Washington, I tore home.
You had been there maybe 6.5 hours.
Something like that.
What happened next?
Got home, found the babysitter asleep on the couch with her mom. God bless her. Went tearing into Jamie's room, sound asleep, hugging his teddy bear. I felt horrible and couldn't explain what had happened. The mom was insanely angry with me and thought I'd been out on an all-night hoot. I started crying and trying to explain, but she wasn't listening by now. She's shoving her daughter out the door. Never again, she said as the door slammed. Never again.
Which only made you feel worse. She nodded, and tears rolled down her cheeks.
I felt like the world's worst mother. I had no idea what had happened to me.
What did you do next?
I found some cigarettes in the back of the kitchen drawer. Salem's. I don't smoke, but that didn't stop me. I lit up and stood at the kitchen sink. I was smoking and crying. I had to keep it soft for Jamie's sake.
Did you call anyone?
Who's there to call?
The cops?
No.
Why not?
My first idea, once I put out the cigarette, was to get in the shower and see if the ink came off. I also needed to see if I had been raped.
Were you?
I don't think so. If I was, he used a condom. The ink didn't come off.
What did you do?
Believe it or not, I took my toothbrush in the shower with me. I scraped some soap on it and scrubbed the letters on my breasts.
Did it help?
Not a bit. It just made it hurt more. Some of the scratches were so deep they started bleeding.
Just a minute. Christine, she was still sitting beside Ermeline. How about some more coffee? I'll bet Ermeline would like one now.
Ermeline? Black,
said Ermeline. She put a hand on her chest and held it there. Okay, so you probably weren't raped and you took a shower.
Then I went to bed and couldn't sleep. Around 7, I called my mom and she came over. I left her with Jamie and I went up to my doctor's, then to the sheriff's office. I talked to Sheriff Altman and he said I should come see District Attorney Quentin Irwin. I drove back home and got Jamie off to school and drove back to the courthouse and parked next to Quentin's space. I sat out front until Quentin arrived.
Christine returned with 2 coffees and set one on the desk before Ermeline. She passed the second one to Thaddeus and excused herself.
I'm going back out to get the phones. Don't want to miss any exciting calls.
Thanks, said Thaddeus.
So, what comes next?
Ermeline asked after swallowing a gulp of coffee.
Can you help me?
I think so. I need to talk to Quentin and Sheriff Altman and see whether they plan to prosecute. Then I'll call you and we'll make some plans. Is that okay?
Did you want to get any more pictures?
I think we've got enough, he said. Chris was trained to take pictures in the Army and does a very fine job for me.
I'm going to call a skin doctor in Quincy. I want to know if they can get this stuff off.
Unknown. It might depend on the type of ink, but I'm just guessing, and I don't like to guess, he said.
No more peasant blouses at work. Not for a while, anyway.
It would show?
Yes. I already tried. Sad to say. Thaddeus, can I ask one thing?
Sure.
Would you sue Victor Harrell for me?
I would, if the facts pan out. Right now it looks very promising, but I still need to talk to some people and read some law. She placed her coffee cup back in its saucer.
Well, then, I guess we're done here.
For now. Remember the rule. Don't discuss this matter with anyone, not even your mom. Everyone is a potential witness if you discuss the case with them.
I'll be quiet.
They shook hands and their eyes met like conspirators. Thaddeus walked Ermeline to the front door. They said their goodbyes and Thaddeus returned to his office and checked his watch. 10:15. Time to catch Quentin at the Silver Dome. They had a lot to discuss. That morning, Thaddeus had begun his day at 5:45 a.m. like he did every day except for Sunday. He flew out of bed wearing nothing but boxers and mounted the life cycle, which he pedaled like a jackhammer for the next 30 minutes, working up a glistening sweat and matted hair. He dismounted the life cycle and went to the junior fridge in his studio. A new gallon of OJ awaited him. He spun the cap and drank half straight down and topped it off with a protein bar, the wrapper of which guaranteed increased muscle mass. At 6:25, he was in the shower, listening to Sirius on the waterproof pink radio and flossing. Dressed in his gray pinstripes and black wingtips and fresh from the shower, Thaddeus had checked his briefcase that morning and counted files. Everything looked fine. Satisfied that the previous night's work was accounted for, he stepped out of the small porch outside his front door. Thaddeus lived only 4 blocks off the Orbit County Square, where all the lawyers spun their webs. His porch faced Madison Street to the south. The sun was still hiding behind the buildings on the town square off to his left, but its orange glow could be seen above the roof lines and trees. As quickly as the sun was coming up, the clouds from last night's rainstorm were burning off, and large patches of blue sky could be seen. The air was clear, the morning doves were calling, and 2 small boys came blasting by on skateboards, probably headed uptown to the best skating around the courthouse. He paused on the red brick porch, flipped the Oakleys over his eyes, inhaled a huge breath of the clear Illinois morning air, and reached the southwest corner of the square at exactly 7 a.m. He strolled past a few stores and took a right into the Silver Dome Inn, part of Bruce Blongear's spread. Here, Thaddeus drank his morning coffee and caught up with the latest. His coffee group consisted mostly of Orbit County farmers who came to town and had coffee with their gossip every day just like Thaddeus, and there was also one other lawyer in attendance, 89-year-old D.B. Leininger. C.C. Seymour came around with coffee, cup, and saucer for Thaddeus. She presided over the room, filling cups and taking breakfast orders, laughing and backslapping and keeping the place happy and loud. One farmer, Jonas Myling, was offering his 2 cents worth when Thaddeus's coffee was poured.
"From what I hear, some very funny business went down in Victor Harrow's bus last night," Myling said.
He raised a white eyebrow and waited to see if anyone else wanted to chime in. Not a nibble.
"Harrow's a funny business involved a certain young lady we all know, I might add."
"Vic Harrow throws some wild parties in that bus," Thaddeus offered.
"Pure hearsay," interjected D.B. Leininger, the emeritus lawyer, in his loud, boisterous German voice.
"Victor Harrow is my client, and a good and decent man. I don't know where you people come up with such rubbish as that. No such thing as wild parties at his bus. For your information, that bus is his office. I've been there, and I've never seen a single bottle of beer or jug of whiskey."
"Which means old Vic didn't care enough to offer you a drink,"
laughed Jonas Myling. Both white eyebrows shot up in anticipation of DB's comeback. But DB only snorted and forked a glob of scrambled eggs in his mouth. "So what did you hear, Jonas?" Thaddeus asked. "What kind of funny business went down last night in the bus?" Jonas Myling snidely remarked,
"Sheriff Altman was paid a visit early this a.m. by a very distraught young woman who our fine sheriff referred over to the district attorney. Seems she had been attacked by Victor Harrow. Now, this is just gossip, and I'm the first to admit it, but I heard this from a deputy sheriff who shall remain anonymous."
"That wouldn't be your son-in-law, Deputy Mike Hermes, would it?"
D.B. Leininger shot down the table.
"This anonymous source a close family member?"
Jonas Myling spread his hands and shook his head, a smile playing around his mouth.
"Can't say."
"What about you, Thaddeus?"
Francis Dorman asked, moving all eyes to Thaddeus.
"Tell us what you've heard about last night."
Thaddeus took a sip of his coffee and shook his head. "Last night, I watched my 2 shows on HBO and was fast asleep by 11. I haven't heard Jack."
"Isn't Harrow a client of yours?"
Dorman persisted. Thaddeus smiled. You know, I couldn't confess to that even if it was true. A lawyer can't tell who his clients are and aren't. Dorman looked around the table. He cut off half a sausage and poked it in his mouth, which didn't stop him from coming after Thaddeus.
From what I hear, you're the one lawyer in town he doesn't do business with, at least not yet. Victor Harrell likes to keep all you lawyers busy, so none of you is free to sue him ever. Conflict of interest or some such.
Dorman smirked, letting everyone know he knew more than they might think. Thaddeus knew Vic Harrow's money came from the strategic relationships he maintained with politicos in Springfield, people who helped him file lowball bids on state highway jobs, especially the never-ending saga of the freeway between Springfield and Chicago. Like all Illinois highway boondoggles, this particular freeway had been under construction for 40 years, and no less than 8 general contractors had made enough to retire forever, thanks to this concrete plum. In return for getting hired as a general contractor on the freeway, Victor kicked back to the Poles and the mob in Chicago. This way, everyone remained happy, with the exception of the traveling public, who, in planning to journey between Springfield and Chicago, always allowed extra time for the 20 miles of construction zone that perpetually plagued the four-lane, like a flesh-eating pox that was always tearing down and hauling away truckloads of dirt and concrete, which it later replaced with dirt and concrete that looked remarkably like what had just been removed. "You might be right about Victor's choice in lawyers," Thaddeus finally said, "but I don't know enough to be much help there. Sorry." Cece came wheeling around with the coffee pots and a tray of desserts.
"Anyone?"
she asked the table. Thaddeus covered his cup with his hand. "Nothing more for me, Cece. Gotta go make a buck."
"Knowing the lawyers in this town, you'll make more today than most farmers in a month."
Jonas Meiling shot at Thaddeus as he climbed to his feet. "That's because I'm such a hard worker, Jonas," Thaddeus replied, resting a hand on Jonas's shoulder. "Unlike you, I don't have hours to burn in the coffee shops around our little town." "Later, gents." They all nodded goodbye, and he paid his check at $7.50 and left the Silver Dome. The sky was flaming red in the east as the early morning yawned over the city of Orbit. Last night's rain was gone and the air was clear and cool. As he did every weekday, Thaddeus scampered across Washington Street when he saw a break and jumped up on the sidewalk on the east side of the square along Monroe Street. He was headed toward his office and kept a brisk step in his stride as if he had important business waiting at the office. In fact, he had no appointments this morning, and the best he could hope for was a DWI from Saturday night or a domestic dispute over the weekend that was continuing today with divorce lawyers. On his left was the courthouse, a magnificent structure built in 1890, according to its inscribed cornerstone, when so much of the rest of America was built in what must have been a gigantic building boom. Thaddeus crossed the street on the north side of the square, edged left 2 doors, and inserted his key. His office was directly above a Western Auto catalog store. At 8 a.m., on schedule, he sat behind his wide oak table and took a sip of coffee. He looked at his calendar for the day and sighed. He admitted to himself that it looked neither promising nor profitable. Yet, here he was, ahead of the crowd, and ready to rule it all across the street. "Just biding my time," he thought. "It will happen, sooner or later. The great case will walk in that door, and I'll be on my way." Paralegal Christine Sussman had received her professional training in the U.S. Army. Following basic training, she had begun her career working as an MP, and had served 2 years at a black ops detention center in Baghdad. She was under lifetime orders to never discuss what she had seen or done on that post, which was fine. She never wanted to discuss it anyway. Following 2 successful years working hand in glove with the CIA field officers, she had her choice of Army schools and selected paralegal school. She had seen all she ever wanted to see of detention centers, prisons, jails, or any other institution where people were held against their will. Paralegal training had dragged on for almost a year, but when she finished, she was assigned to a JAG unit of busy lawyers in Germany. Christine was 5'5 in average weight, but that's where average ended for her. For one thing, she was beautiful and had won Miss Hickman County in the summer of her senior year, right before enlisting. For another thing, she was built like an NFL safety, broad, heavily muscled shoulders and upper arms, muscular thighs and calves, and she could still press 275. While she only weighed 135. She worked out religiously at the East Orbit Athletic Club with her husband, Sonny. Christine found working for Thaddeus to be pleasant yet difficult, mainly because Thaddeus knew so little about the practicalities of law practice, which drove Christine to the phones, where she was constantly calling her friends in other law offices with questions about how to do this and that, the nuts and bolts that pay the bills. Chris's day began at 8:30. At 8:25, she came up the stairs two at a time and bounced into the office. She called out good morning, made sure Thaddeus had coffee, checked the voicemails, and went over the day's diary. Today, she was wearing the outfit that always made it to the office at least one day a week. Long gray skirt, embroidered top, and navy blazer with gold buttons. She kept the nails short and clear of polish. They would only be traumatized at the athletic club anyway. Following the scan of the calendar, Christine called into Thaddeus.
Got another hot chick for you next Saturday night.
Thaddeus winced. He answered her over their intercom system, which consisted of the two of them shouting back and forth from their desks down the short hallway separating them.
No, thanks. I'll do my own recruiting. Besides, my ideal woman is getting her PhD in English Lit. I doubt you know her.
No, this is different. Her name's Lila, and she went through basic with me. She's coming for a visit.
She's too old for me if she went through basic with you. I don't date older women, I told you that.
Thad, I'm 5 years older than you. So is Lila. That's not an older woman, as you so hatefully put it.
Not hatefully, not scornfully. Just cautiously.
We need to get you matched up with someone.
Why is that again?
So you can be truly happy, like Sunny.
He knew better than to say anything about her husband.
Quentin Irwin Jr. just called from the DA's office. He's sending over a young woman for you to talk to.
Probably a divorce client. Here's hoping she's got $1,500.
I'll second that.
While Christine was busy in her office, Thaddeus went back to updating his Facebook page. Status, single. But looking. 10 minutes later, Ermeline Ransom was standing on the other side of his desk, unbuttoning her blouse, while Thaddeus, for once, was speechless.